Okay, let's unpack this for you. We've plunged into a really fascinating stack of sources, all centered around Vermont education. From the biggest policy shifts happening at the state level, all the way down to, the day-to-day challenges in schools, our goal for this deep dive is really to cut through all the noise, distill the most important nuggets, and maybe uncover some truly surprising facts about what's unfolding in education right now.
And what's particularly striking, I think, about these materials is just the sheer breadth of perspectives they offer. We're looking at everything from, official task force updates to these deeply personal op-eds. It gives us a genuinely comprehensive view of the landscape. It's not just one story, it's many interwoven ones.
Exactly. And you're going to hear about a major overhaul of Vermont's school governance that's, well, already facing some serious headwinds. A surprising turn in federal funding that impacts every state, actually, and even how AI is subtly shaping student learning.
There's a lot there.
There is. So let's jump right in. Okay, so we've set the stage with the sheer scope of change, and the first major act in this ongoing drama seems to be the launch of the Vermont School District Redistricting Task Force. Our sources highlight this as the biggest governance reform in 100-and-something years. That's quite a claim.
It really is.
Tasked with redrawing the very map of school districts, this is an 11-member body meant to develop redistricting options for the legislature. But what immediately jumped out to me in these sources, and where it gets truly interesting, is the internal friction already surfacing.
It's more than just friction, I'd say. I mean, the logistical challenge alone here looks immense.
How so?
Well, how do you consolidate what's essentially a 2-year work job into 4 months?
That's wow.
Our sources indicate task force members themselves are expressing some pretty profound doubts.
Like what?
Well, comments like, "It's pretty clear we are not capable of doing what we already have on our plate." So this isn't just about a tight timeline. It points to maybe a deeper tension. Is Vermont's leadership trying to force top-down change faster than, grassroots consensus can build?
Good question.
And what does that risk for the very buy-in needed for long-term reform? I mean, one school board member watching the first meeting even predicted there's a strong possibility that the whole thing just goes away.
Wow. That's a pretty stark prediction right at the outset.
It is.
And it's not just this new task force that's struggling. Our sources also bring us an update from the Commission on the Future of Public Education in Vermont,
Ah, yes, that commission.
where two members, including the chair, recently resigned.
I saw that.
Their stated reason was an inability to continue in a process that, and I'm quoting here, sacrifices equity and accountability in favor of power, privilege, and political games.
Strong words.
Very. And when you combine that with the feeling that there's not a track record to demonstrate the commission will be listened to, it really makes you wonder about the viability of these large-scale reform efforts, doesn't it?
It certainly raises the question of whether speed is inherently at odds with true equity and, sustainability and governance. And the impact isn't just at the state level either. These ambitious redistricting efforts are already running into real-world friction.
How so?
Our sources detail a brewing conflict between adjacent school districts and early arguments about representation.
Already?
Which some see as a harbinger of trouble ahead for statewide redistricting.
Not a good sign.
No. And it's interesting to note that the state of Vermont has provided this build a district mapping tool.
Oh, yeah, what's that?
It allows users to sort of create merged districts based on current student counts and grand list values per student.
Okay, the grand list value, that's the total taxable property value, right? Crucial for school funding.
Exactly. So it lets people play around with the numbers, but whether that translates to real-world agreement, that's another story.
So while the public system grapples with these ambitious yet clearly challenging internal reforms, our deep dive also uncovered another arena of intense debate:
Which is?
the evolving role and funding of independent schools here in Vermont.
Ah, yes. Always a hot topic.
It really is. And this isn't just a side discussion. It seems central to the broader educational ecosystem. Our sources reveal a fascinating and sometimes pretty intense conversation around it. Public school advocates, for instance, voiced concerns about what they called an unvetted, unmapped-out proposal at the 11th hour during state-level negotiations that unexpectedly favored independent schools.
And the spectrum of opinions here is quite compelling when you look at the op-eds and other pieces.
How so?
Well, You see Neil O'Dell arguing pretty forcefully that public funding should demand public standards for independent schools, you know, emphasizing accountability. Yet others, like Sean Montague, highlight the clear community benefits of places like St. Johnsbury Academy, calling it the cornerstone of our economic and social fabric.
So very different perspectives on their role.
Exactly. And you also hear from many individuals who support independent schools because they fill an educational void for our students in rural Vermont and have done so cost-effectively and incredibly well.
Right.
And this whole discussion is further complicated by new federal legislation, which gives states the choice now whether to opt into vouchers for new federal school voucher programs.
So another layer of complexity there. It sounds like a complex tightrope walk. Really.
It is.
And our sources also point to what one pundit called an escape hatch in the final education reform bill, H-494, now Act 73.
An escape hatch, what does that mean?
It suggests opportunities to take a few steps back and try again in the coming years. So
right.
Maybe not locking things in completely.
Interesting. Hedging their bets, maybe?
Perhaps. And the legislative process for Act 73 itself sounded, well, like quite a ride. The House passed one bill. The Senate passed a different one. Then there was apparently a last-minute swerve in the conference committee.
Ah, the conference committee shuffle.
Exactly. And then a voice vote in the House made it unclear who actually voted for or against it.
Not exactly transparent.
No. It sounds like quite a chaotic process. And one legislator's comment was pretty pointed. Both this process and the product are a disservice to my community and to our democracy.
Wow. That sums up some frustration there.
Definitely. And as with any major policy overhaul, it's impossible to truly understand the landscape without delving into the crucial issue of funding.
Always comes back to the money, doesn't it?
It often does. Yeah. Our sources show that federal money in particular has been on quite the roller coaster ride lately, adding another layer of complexity to Vermont's educational planning. We heard the story of the education dollars clawback.
Right, the CRT thing.
Yeah. Where the White House was considering demanding the return of education funding due to concerns about indoctrination of four-year-olds of critical race theory in preschool programs.
Which caused quite a stir.
It did. And then we had the AOE freeze, where Vermont's Agency of Education, the AOE, actually paused hiring.
Why was that?
Because the U.S. Department of Education decided not to release funding to states for a period.
Ah, okay. So federal holds impacting state operations directly.
Exactly. Seems like a period of rapid and often contradictory shifts.
It really does, because right after that funding freeze, there was this swift big defrost, right?
It happened.
The federal administration quickly turned around and released more than $1 billion for after-school programs.
A billion, wow. So a complete reversal.
Pretty much. Yeah. Angela Lin observed these last-minute shenanigans from the federal government, kind of questioning the justification for those funding holds in the first place. I think the key insight here is just the sheer unpredictability of federal funding, which must make long-term planning incredibly difficult for states like Vermont.
Absolutely.
And it's also worth noting the U.S. Department of Justice guidance on unlawful discrimination for federally funded programs.
What's the gist of that?
Basically, programs targeting low-income students must be applied uniformly without targeting specific areas or populations just to achieve certain racial or sex-based outcomes.
Okay, so adding another layer of compliance to navigate, that kind of financial uncertainty must be incredibly challenging for school leaders.
You'd think so, yeah.
But beyond the funding shifts, our sources highlight some truly innovative steps other states are taking. Things Vermont leaders and lawmakers could maybe take note of.
Like what?
Well, for example, Ohio has a new program ensuring more K-3 students receive eye exams and glasses. Simple, but potentially huge impact.
Definitely.
And get this, over 60 colleges across the country are now offering 3-year undergraduate degrees.
3 years? That's a big shift.
Isn't it? While Louisiana now requires middle school math teachers to take an additional 50 hours of math training.
Focusing on teacher expertise.
Right. And it seems there's a quiet revolution happening in instructional methods, too, here in Vermont, actually.
Oh.
There's this small but mighty provision in recently passed Vermont legislation that apparently marks the moment Vermont abandoned unfounded instructional approaches that taught children to guess and invent instead of directly decoding and spelling the English language.
Wow. That sounds like the science of reading shift finally making its way into law.
That's what it sounds like. a potentially significant shift in pedagogical approach.
It really does. It shows an important pivot towards, you know, evidence-based literacy instruction. That could have real long-term positive impacts on student outcomes.
Absolutely. It's clear that policy and funding are critical, but ultimately, education is about the students and the dedicated people who make our schools run.
The human element.
Exactly. Our sources shift focus now to crucial insights into their experiences, from how they support each other to some alarming trends in attendance and safety.
Right.
We even found some Goldilocks communication suggestions for superintendents. How often and how much to communicate with their boards. Kind of practical advice.
Always useful.
But then you encounter these truly harrowing accounts, like the psychological terror a Vermont superintendent described after being detained by federal agents when returning from abroad.
Oh, I read about that. That was deeply concerning.
It really was. The superintendent recounted, "They threatened me with sending me to the FBI, with making me lose my job, with tainting my record. They threatened me with extended detention."
Unbelievable. For a U.S. citizen.
Yes. Senator Martine LaRocque-Gulick has publicly shared her support for this superintendent, and it's just stunning to read about that kind of pressure.
It is, and it really unearths this broader, often unseen dimension of stress and, frankly, external pressure faced by educational leaders.
Yeah.
It forces us to consider how school systems can better protect and support those at the helm from non-academic, even alarming interference like that. Huh. The question becomes, what does it take for leaders to navigate such intense pressures? Our sources also touch on when it might be time for a superintendent to throw in the towel.
What's the advice there?
It emphasizes that taking care of yourself and checking in to make sure that you're still aligned with the community's priorities is just mission critical. Self-preservation, really.
Makes sense.
We also see lessons learned from past school mergers, you know, requiring critical ingredients like teacher buy-in, political courage, shared values. The usual suspects for successful change.
Right. Hard stuff.
Yeah. And despite the challenges, there's actually a rapid drop in statewide vacancies for counseling staff, which is a positive sign.
Oh, that's the news.
Those school leader vacancies were still at 65 positions last year, so still a challenge there.
Mm.
But it's good to know support resources like the How Ya Doin' initiative exist, offering self-care and professional help with a rostered psychotherapist and a VPA mentor.
That sounds like an absolutely essential resource for those on the front lines. And speaking of students, our deep dive also brought up crucial insights into their experiences. The Students Supporting Students initiative from Winooski News sounds great.
What's that about?
It showcases how schools with diverse representation build positive community by, quote, "giving students that platform to express their struggles and lens is a very powerful tool."
Absolutely. Student voice is key.
But then, on a more concerning note, there's the skipping more school phenomenon.
Ah, chronic absenteeism.
Yeah, and the question of whether it's becoming the new normal based on data from the Hechinger report.
That's a worrying trend nationwide, not just Vermont.
It really makes you wonder about the long-term impact on student learning and well-being.
The absenteeism trend is certainly a significant concern. And on that note, switching from the abstract policy debates to the raw reality in schools, the data on school safety is truly sobering.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Our sources report 7 school shootings logged in 2025 so far. That's after 39 in 2024.
Grim numbers.
And that includes a specific accidental shooting in Michigan, where a 15-year-old student accidentally shot another 15-year-old student on a school bus.
Oh, terrible.
When you see statistics like that, it just reminds us of the constant vigilance required.
Absolutely.
And it's important to remember Vermont's anonymous school safety tip line is available. You can call 1-844-SAFE-E4VT, text SAFE-E4VT to 274-637, or go online at safe4vt.org.
Good to have those resources handy.
And SUNY Erickson can be contacted for questions about school safety training in Vermont. One quick but important note on support lines.
Yes.
Our sources mentioned the discontinuation of the 988 Press 3 option specifically for LGBTQIA+ youth support.
Oh, why?
It seems to be based on a federal decision affecting all states, but the main suicide and crisis lifeline, 988, remains available to everyone.
Okay, that distinction is definitely important for listeners to be aware of. Thanks for clarifying.
Sure.
Finally, shifting gears one last time, our sources illuminate how the digital age is profoundly impacting learning, bringing both, you know, new tools and new challenges.
AI looms large here, I imagine.
It does. For example, ChatGPT now has a new study mode feature.
Exactly mode.
Yeah. It scaffolds AI-generated answers, apparently, to support student learning, not just give the answer away.
Interesting adaptation.
It feels like the technology is adapting to education almost as fast as educators are adapting to it.
It's true, and it prompts us to consider how educators are truly adapting. Our sources include an opinion piece on the art of AI detection,
okay,
which actually suggests that educators should responsibly integrate ChatGPT-like AI tools rather than simply banning them.
Integrate, not ban.
Yeah, recognizing how students' creative writing is evolving in this era and that maybe a purely punitive approach might miss the larger shift that's happening.
That's a nuanced take.
And on a different tech note, there's this fantastic-sounding DIY exoplanet search tool from the Center for Astrophysics.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, allowing students to engage with real astronomical data and literally discover new worlds. How cool is that?
That sounds like an amazing way to spark scientific curiosity.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Right.
And wrapping up our deep dive, we also encountered some other fascinating data points, like mapping out allegations.
What's that?
It's a summary of over 150 active federal investigations into K-12 schools and universities, broken out by topic area. So a snapshot of federal oversight.
Useful for tracking trends.
Then there's the big money in school lunches story.
Go on.
Where a private equity-backed firm recently purchased a local food service company that serves about 70 Vermont schools.
Ah, the financialization trend.
Exactly. It's not just local business news. It's a prime example of this national trend, the increasing financialization of public services.
Right.
Makes you consider what happens when profit motives from, you know, distant investors enter spaces traditionally anchored in community health and student well-being.
A really important question.
And finally, a positive note from the Secretary of State on the Kid Governor program in Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
Teaches fifth grade students about state government, voting, civic engagement. A nice little civics boost.
Always good to see.
So what does this all mean for you listening? We've journeyed through these ambitious but often embattled reforms in Vermont, the passionate debates over school choice, the unpredictable flow of federal dollars, and the very real human experiences of those shaping and participating in our education system, all while navigating the rapid rise of AI.
It's a lot.
It is.
Huh.
Our goal, as always, is to provide you a shortcut to being well-informed on these critical topics.
And stepping back, I think a consistent theme emerges from all these sources.
What's that?
That for all the grand policy aspirations, the success of education reform ultimately hinges on, well, resilient leadership, transparent processes, and this unwavering commitment to the well-being and equitable opportunity for every single student.
Mm-hmm.
Well put.
And this prompts an important question, I think, for all of us to consider.
Mm.
In a world where policy can shift so quickly, how much does the real work of education depend on local grit and resolve, regardless of what's happening at the state or federal level?
Yeah. And maybe more pointedly, what unexpected challenges might arise in an election year when everything feels heightened?
That's a great question to leave folks with. We hope this deep dive gave you some new insights and sparked some thoughts for you to chew on.
Hopefully.
Until next time, keep digging into what matters.